Maple Ballot Show on 720 WGN 236 in the morning in our studio. Roger, how many years have we been doing this show? Is it like six now or something insane?
Yeah, you and me together like this. Yeah, about six, even though we touched base back and forth when I first started about 11 and a half years ago.
I think I've been here for a really long time doing this show.
You've been here, you've been doing the show longer than you've been alive.
Okay. It's been a long time, and when I first got this job, I reached out to my friends, Kurt, Tracy, and Audrey, and said, you guys should come in the middle of the night. Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah. And they were just like, there's no way in hell we're ever doing that. They had no interest at all, didn't care, didn't want to do it. But since we recently had lunch, and I told them, you know, we're moving out of the Tribune Tower in a couple of weeks, and they spent a lot of their formative years here in this tower, they all said, all right, fine, we'll get up in the middle of the night, and we'll come in. Audrey Clark, Tracy Weiner, formerly everybody remembers her as Tracy Huvelman, and Kurt Vandraw, Kathy and Judy Show, Spike Odell Show, Bob Collins Show, are back in studio for the first time together here. I don't know, when's the last time you guys were all together in this building, do you think? Outside of Walk of Fame. What year? Who? So I left in 2007. Kurt, you were the last one to leave here.
I left 10 years ago this week.
Oh, get out of here.
Yep.
10 years ago this week. So, and Tracy...
Don't make me do math right now. I don't know.
Well, what year did you leave the station? Had to be about 2001.
Yeah.
And Audrey, were you still here then for a while then, or were you already gone?
I was gone. I left July 2000.
Wow. That's a long time ago, guys.
Yeah.
That's a really long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great show.
See ya.
Well, thank you all for coming in, and I just wanted to reminisce a little bit. Tracy, you were at the Walk of Fame induction on Friday. Got to see your old friend Roger Treemstra.
Yes, it was great.
Get inducted.
Yes, it was great.
And he sounded as I heard some of it on the radio, and he sounded as funny as ever. As like I don't know,
Spitfire.
Was he always a big troublemaker?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, on the show.
Yes. Yes.
Audrey may have stories. She's nodding.
Oh, yes. I just remember... I mean, that question seems absurd to me.
Because Roger was always in trouble. Did Roger do weather like throughout the day, back in the day? Was he like on in the mornings and with Spike, or was he only on with Spike?
He was on with Bob when I was first there, and then I think...
Which shift? Because I was doing middays, afternoons. I was doing all kinds of shifts with Spike.
So my time with you guys... Audrey was with Bob in the mornings, and then Kathy and Judy were on with Kurt, and then I was on middays with John, and then you were on with Spike in afternoon drives. To me, that's like my time here at GN was that lineup.
Late 90s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, he would be on. We would hang up on him quite regularly.
And who did weather in the mornings with Bob, Audrey? You don't remember? Seriously?
I know Roger was on when I first started.
Yeah, I thought he was just on. Then,
so Roger just probably popped in all day long.
Well, no, he wasn't here. He would leave.
Right, he would do it from his home studio, right?
Yeah, but he was in with you. I remember, because then also when we were middays, when Spike was 9 to noon, Roger and I would play ping pong in the back. Remember when the ping pong table was outside of Tisa's office?
There was no ping pong table when I got here, because I wasn't here with Tisa. It was Mary June who hired me. So I don't know Tisa, and I never knew a ping pong table.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, well, there was a ping pong table, and Bob would call... back to the office to see what the score was of our game. Our match. On the air. And in fact, all these years later, at the Walk of Fame, Roger's out there telling everyone, grabbing me and saying, I would beat the pants off of this woman playing ping pong.
Is that true? Could you not handle Roger?
I don't actually remember it that way.
I do.
Actually.
That was true.
What?
He would beat you regularly.
I don't remember it like that. Okay, I said no. I beat him.
Oh,
guess there should have been a rematch at the.
There was a lot of playing. It was super fun. It was great to see him and his wife. They're great. It was really fun.
Well, he looked like he was still doing rather well because Roger's got to be getting up there, right? He's got to be in his 80s, isn't he?
86.
Wow. So he's doing great.
Yeah, I see him actually in Maxfield.
Yeah,
and Roger and I get together every year for breakfast or lunch around Christmas time. So we meet out in Oak Brook.
Yeah.
And so we try to see each other once a year.
That's great.
Yeah, his wife comes with him, and then they go shopping after we have our lunch.
Aw.
Yeah.
How sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Now, is the Walk of Fame over? I thought that's why you said we were supposed to come in today, that we were Getting our stars? that's what got us in here this hour in the morning? No.
I didn't
no.
get that memo.
Okay. No, well, I think that they wanted you in to help start taking out the ones that yeah. are in there.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a because we're moving, you know, in case nobody's told you, we're moving. So
Kurt, here's your walk of fame. Grab some crap and start walking.
That sounds more like it. Oh, yeah, I've got a truck. Okay, yeah, we need you to help move.
That's well, Marlene was talking the about the closets and how she's going from six closets to one closet, and she has to share it.
Well, it's funny. A few weeks ago, Marlene must be cleaning out stuff because Steve Bertrand started texting me pictures. Do you remember when Marlene would have a Christmas tree in the big conference room down here every year, and all of our photos were on an ornament?
Oh, my gosh.
Marlene yeah. still has those because Steve Bertrand sent me a text with a picture of myself from, like, 1998 on an ornament.
Wow.
I remember that because
in pristine condition.
She used to have it in the corner of the hallway that went around the newsroom.
Upstairs or here?
On the first floor. I remember okay. it when I first yep. started. It was on a table in the corner of the hallway as you're coming past the traffic desks and going around the newsroom, that hallway that would go around the newsroom. It was in the corner, and everybody's pictures were on the ornaments.
Oh my! Showing was she giving him away?
He looks like a fourth grade.
I don't know.
Girl.
I don't know if she's giving him away. I don't know what
oh
she's doing.
Oh my god!
Maybe they're just moving on over to the new place. But well, you get the feeling Marlene just never threw anything away. Never let anybody take anything. And
oh, there was
it,
no feeling about
away.
It. There was a known fact. What are you talking about?
Well, I know she wouldn't let anybody take anything. My favorite
she
Marlene story, and I love Marlene like nothing else. But there was something where John and I were doing something on Pioneer Court here, like a quick somebody was coming by and we were doing something, and there might have been media presence. So Marlene gave us through sweatshirts in our office, like wear these sweatshirts, and I didn't put mine on, and when I came back, it was gone. She took it back.
Oh, it's just to borrow. It was.
Well, I don't know, or maybe because I didn't wear it. She said, well, then you don't get to keep it. I'll give it to somebody else.
That makes sense to me. You didn't earn it.
I guess not.
I don't think she gave it to somebody else.
You think she just kept it?
Back to the closet.
Yeah. She probably still has Spike hats. Remember the Spike Odell hat?
Mustard. Didn't Spike just throw away cases of mustard? I thought he had posted, or you told us that at a lunch recently, that Spike was cleaning out and he still had cases of mustard.
I had
cases of mustard?
My dad still, the bite your butt mustard.
And
I haven't opened
good
it
anymore.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Guessing, right?
No, Spike said, please, to Tracer, don't open it. Yeah. Just keep it closed. So there was a mayonnaise. I actually, because we had mayonnaises too, and it started to come through the glass. I don't know how, but it was like oily label. Like, I don't know what happened with the mayonnaise. That went in the garbage. I couldn't keep that because I didn't want it to like wreck everything in my.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Do you guys all have a favorite? Is there one singular memory of WGN Radio from your time here, Kurt?
One?
You spent. Well, I mean, if there's a one that sticks out above all the others, so I'll say my memory of each of you. With Kurt, it's got to be, and I don't even know if I was here. Or you've just told the story so well over the years that I know it this well. It's got to be when we had the studios in the back, and there was a step up, and you went flying into it. And you jumped,
that's
and didn't
story.
You slam your head into the ceiling in there?
Yep.
And busted it open,
oh,
right?
Yeah. So it was just before, it was after the Bulls had won one of their NBA championships, and there was a rally in Grant Park.
I literally did not even work here yet, I don't think.
Is that right?
I don't
this is how we met?
I think I've just story. Heard you tell the story for years. Maybe I worked
His
here,
pain
I guess.
Is
I feel
a
like
sto-
I've told this story a lot, but maybe I told it right. So anyway, we're in Studio A up in the middle rather than being in the showcase studio because Kathy and Judy weren't going to be on the air. We were throwing it out to Grant Park to be live. So, but they had to set it up, and so we were back in the inside studios. And I can't remember what it was, but just before airtime, we needed something in that producer's area. So I went running out into the main engineering room and MC, and then came running back in. And there was one step that led up to the producer's booths for A and A1. And Kerry Thomas was standing there, and Ron Cohn was standing there. And for some reason,
I didn't know it was in front of a group.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what made it. That was, I think, probably the reason for it. And so I was, I don't know, like a cartoon character. So I took one bounding leap up the first step and then took another bounding leap up the second step. But there's no second step. There's just the door frame, which was maybe 7 foot. And it must have looked horrible. And I went full speed forehead first into the top of the door frame and then down like a sack of bricks, and they just looked at me and in horror.
Did your body sort of go parallel to the ground? Like, I could see, like, you jump and then boom and then just...
I'm assuming like it looked like Wile E. Coyote, right? It's just whoop, just straight up in the air, like at a 45-degree angle, and then directly straight down. And I just looked up at him because what do you say? And then I didn't have to say anything because blood just started pouring from my head. And so I went and sat in the producer's chair and they thought, oh my God, he's dead. And I got up, went to the producer's chair and said, I think I'm going to have to
take... The show must go on.
Yeah, and the girls are on the other side of the studio window and we're having a heart attack. What's going on? And so...
That's the story you remember of Kurt?
Yeah.
Did you produce the show?
It wasn't even...
No, they sent me home.
So, the show must go on, but I'm not going to be part of it.
But this is a true story, because it kind of made a mess on impact, or shortly after impact. There was blood on the wall of that studio for maybe 4 or 5 months later. Nobody bothered to clean it up, because it was dark in there, and it like was behind a garbage can, sort of, and it dripped out. I'm like, I know what that is. That's me. And it was there for very long.
You didn't clean it?
No.
Well, then it was like Marlene should have yelled at him, Kurt, clean up that blood, for goodness sakes.
Put a sweatshirt over it.
I wasn't even working here yet, but you've told that story very well over the years. Wow. But now there's new dimensions. I mean...
Can't wait to find out what stories you have of them.
I could have gone with the horse story that you told us over the years. It's not even you working here. Kurt has the longest personal story in the world that literally has no ending. Like, you just wait and wait and wait and think, all right, this is going to be good, because he took a half hour to tell it, and then it just dies.
There was this other time where I got punched right in the gut. Just
there's
this
the story you probably
punch.
Have about me. That was me to you. Yes. Go ahead and tell that story if you want.
I want to hear it.
Well, do you not know that story, Audrey?
I was there.
We all went to... Hey there. We all went
Aubrey Von Power, a longtime engineer, walking in the studio, saying hi to some old friends who he hasn't seen in a long time, I'm sure.
As you were.
So the story, we were all... It was the four of us,
the producers,
right?
used to go out. This group and Steve Buckman, who produced Steve and Johnny for a long time, and Audrey Truman. Julie Truman.
Audrey's right here.
Julie Truman, who produced Milt Rosenberg for years. We used to get together pretty regularly. We were all young and got to do things like that. And one day we walked out of Mi Tierra, which is closed down again for good.
And we were walking.
We had been drinking.
A couple or two or three.
And I do not know why. I just turned and punched.
Just turned around. Right in the solar plexus.
And hard.
Without him expecting it at
all.
Well,
hard for Matt.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, and that's the end of the story, really. And then it was like, just this big punch, and then, why did I do that? I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that.
It was probably about the horse story. Yeah. Was that the day you told it?
No. Horse story is much later.
Yes. It was? I don't know about that.
It might still be going on, so I don't know if...
Kurt actually, by the way, then for Christmas gave us all a picture of himself on that horse. Which I still have.
I don't remember that.
You did. I have a picture of you. It's like 18 years old on some stupid white horse. Audrey Clark, longtime producer for Bob Collins. Do you have a singular memory of WGN Radio in your time here?
No, I have tons of stories. But one that I'm reminded of seeing Aubrey was we... One time we got gift cards from a big department store as one of our Christmas presents. And I remember showing up the next day and talking with Aubrey because, we didn't get paid much as producers. So I was so excited about my gift card. It was like $100. Yeah. It was a big money.
Was it from Marshall Fields? I remember my first.
I
think it was like $150.
It was a lot. Whatever it was, I remember it was jaw-dropping to me.
Yeah.
And I turned to Aubrey and I was so excited about my gift certificate. He said, oh, I hate getting these. Like, seriously, what are you talking about? I'll take yours. He's like, every single time I go in there, security follows me.
I love those cards.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Well, that was a big deal. And I remember my first year here that we got those at Christmas and I was stunned, like, wow. And I think it was like Bertrand, somebody who had been here for, 20 years already, who was like, oh, we used to get so much more. And I was thinking, gosh, this is incredible. And nowadays, you would never get anything like that at probably any place you work at, really. And back in the day, that was, you know, that was incredible.
That didn't happen, like, our entire time being here. Because I feel like in the time that I was here,
no, it went downhill pretty quick.
Yeah, I think so.
We got in at the end of the golden age of radio.
Yeah. Because
then it went to, like, varsity jackets. Remember the, like, the brown leather or suede sleeves?
What?
Yeah, yeah. I still have mine.
Do you that. Really?
Mm-hmm. It depended I love that jacket. Who you were, too. Some of those gift certificates were, like, $500,000.
They were not $500,000.
It was the year before you started.
$500 or $1,000? Are you serious? I'm guessing those went to the on-air talent, not to the lowly producers. Yeah. But you heard the stories?
Yeah.
Are you sure Bob wasn't just pulling your leg?
No.
Hey, Aubrey, I got $1,000. What'd you get?
Look what I got, Aubrey. You know, I mean, you didn't.
Merry Christmas.
Bob wouldn't do that.
Aubrey, what year did you start at WGN?
86.
So the year that they moved back here to the tower.
86, they hired me to help build the new facility here in Tribune
Tower. So you helped build this facility that we're sitting in right now?
Yeah, I drug about 50,000 feet of cable.
Wow. From Bradley Place or from delivery trucks that came here?
Yeah, we moved down from Bradley Place and we built a brand new facility.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to move anything down here from Bradley. It was some things we did, but not many.
Wow. Roger Battis joining us now in studio as well. Roger came here after all these guys, so he doesn't know everybody, but he's happy to see them all.
I am. Yeah. I might be Facebook friends with a few. Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to reset. We've got more to come. If you have a question about the old days, you remember Kathy and Judy and Bob and Spike when they were all here, we'll be happy to answer them as well. 312-981-7200. Bampu Bala with you on 720 WGN. So why don't you just meet me in the middle? In the middle. Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. We've got Kurt Vanderaw, longtime suffering producer of the Kathy and Judy Show. Tracy Weiner, she was Tracy Huvelman back in the day with Spike Odell. And Audrey Clark, former producer of the Bob Collins Show, all sitting in studio reminiscing about the old days here at WGN Radio. Kurt, you transitioned out of Kathy and Judy and into management here at WGN.
I tried.
No, you did. You became assistant program director. Yep. How many years did you do that?
I think three, a little more than three. And that's when...
Did you miss producing at the time, or did you like the idea of moving up towards management? Because as we said earlier, you made absolutely no money as a producer. It was it was awful. Like, there was you couldn't really live on it well.
Yeah.
No, that's why all. Those Marshall Field certificates were such a big deal.
You weren't
going to
have kids and survive that way.
Yeah.
You could have literally, like, gone and worked at UPS or something like that and ended up making a lot more money than what you were doing here.
Sure.
So I mean, seriously, that's how I used to look at it. So you moved into management.
Financially viable as a manager.
Didn't make a lot more there either.
It lasted 3 years and it was time to move on.
Yeah. So, and what are you doing now? Tell everybody, like, where Kurt Vanderaw has gone.
So now I work for dairy farmers. I work for the dairy industry overall, and I run a community to help everybody who's part of the dairy industry talk with one another, get them all connected that way, which has been terrific.
Do you talk to Orion Samuelson as part of this job at all?
I don't. I saw him from across the room at an industry function at the end of last year, but he had to leave during part of it, I think, to get back on air or Orion and ship out. But I've talked with Max Armstrong, too, a couple times since the new job started.
Excellent.
Which is terrific.
Tracy, you left, you were producing Spike, and then when Spike went to mornings, you started producing when Steve Cochran started here, right?
Yeah, for like 5 minutes. Yeah, for a couple weeks.
It was longer than 5 minutes.
I don't remember how long, but it wasn't very long. Of a couple, month or two, three, I don't know.
And then you left, you got married, you had a bunch of kids, and we got Roger, is that
you
upstairs?
That's not me.
That was me, sorry.
Aubrey, you're...
Aubrey's fries are ready.
Aubrey's connected. You got to understand that. Aubrey has connections to some very
tower
sinister,
warnings go off on your body? Yeah. How do you have that worked out? What the hell's going on over there?
No, it's just telling me what.
Does that mean the transmitter needs an upgrade?
Yeah, I have a built-in time tone now.
Just need a red flashing light on your head.
So, last time I was in the hospital, they gave me a new brain.
Okay.
You're saying this looks bad. We better fix it while we're in there.
Tracy, so you left and
I left.
You went and got married. You've had two wonderful children.
Yep.
You've been bossing around people on the PTA for 5-6 years now.
Yep.
Threatening to run for office.
School board.
You didn't do that.
I did not.
Yet.
Yep. just living the suburban dream, driving the minivan. Yep, it's good times.
And oh, and you're doing a podcast here now. Tell everybody about that.
I haven't talked about it yet.
Oh, are we not allowed to talk about it yet?
There's some things.
Is it
in
out
the
there
works?
Yet or not?
No,
out there
not yet.
Yet.
Okay. Next week. Yeah.
Tracy's working on a podcast that will soon be on WGN Plus with Ann Johnsos,
yep.
A parenting podcast,
yep.
Which we've heard a little preview of, and it sounds awesome.
Thank you.
So we're very excited about that.
Yes. Yep. For average parents.
How often do you talk to Spike?
Not probably as often as you'd think, but we text a lot.
Yeah.
So he's loving Tennessee. He loves Nashville. It's a suburb of Nashville, and Michael and Caroline are there, too. So, and yeah. He has, like, 5 grandkids now, so.
And literally, busy. I think Spike barbecues about 6 out of 7 days a week. I mean,
do you just get hungry when you see his posts?
Yes, because it his looks brisket? Like he just took it out of a magazine. It doesn't look like something somebody you know actually would have made.
Oh, he's loved cooking, like, yeah. For as long as I've known him.
Sure.
So, yeah, he is really good. Like, I don't know how he can whip up some of the stuff, but he's retired, so he has the time.
You're right.
I have 2 kids. I don't have the time to make the things that he makes. So, yeah, but he's doing really well.
Good. And Audrey, you left and you went and got a master's.
Yes, got my MBA.
And what have you been up to?
Then I went to consulting,
mm-hmm.
where I helped Fortune 500s come up with new businesses. I did that for about 10 years. And then a TSA agent saw me at the airport and said, "Where have you been? I've missed you." And the only difference was I was flying out of the other airport that week. So I thought, my life seems to be a little out of whack.
So you literally were traveling so much that a TSA agent recognized you.
Oh,
and that made you stop and pause and think, maybe this is not how I want to be doing things?
Yes, exactly.
Really? I never knew that.
We always go out for lunch. I've never heard that
never
story
Never heard that
before.
Story, yeah.
Oh, well, it's a good thing I came down today.
Yeah.
She was saving it for the show.
All right.
Right.
We'll find out a little bit more about what Audrey's been up to. But first, it is 3:03 in the morning, and we got to make sure and get to the news.
What? Seriously?
Do you believe
on time?
I got 3 minutes late.
Did you
sadly, it's on time. 3 producers in the room. Not one of them said, maybe we should go to the news. Not terrible.
My palms are all sweating.
Man.
It's 3:00 in the morning.
Okay, did you know you could win a 2018 Chevy Silverado? For details, listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. And hey, if you're a smart speaker user, just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Cars for Kids. Here's Roger Badish. We're flying up no ceiling when we in our... Good morning, everybody. We're having a lot of fun in here. It's 3:10 in the morning. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. We are live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in the historic Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. Not for much longer. WGN Radio is moving down the road a couple of blocks away south of the river. Aubrey, do we know when that move is happening? I know that that's always up in the air.
Our deadline is June 30th.
We have to be gone by June 30th.
We have to be out of here June 30th or they're going to... Just throw the junk out in the street.
Just throw us out. And sales has already moved over. Is that right? To
most
the
most of everything's over there except the studio stuff. And we're slowly getting that over.
And when do you think that one of the studios is up and functional there? Like, how early do you think
Some
it could
of them
be?
We're up and functional now.
Could actually flip a switch and put them on the air?
You know, we were talking about that. And I think, well, if something really terrible happens, could we go on the air over there right now? And Bill says, well, it wouldn't be pretty, but yeah, we could do it.
Really?
Your show would still 5. Let's go.
I really would love...
You could be the first one.
Roger and I have talked about that. Yes. I would love to be the final, like, you know, when we shut it down, we, like, throw it to news, and then we run over there and start up over there.
I'm
pretty
be...
sure they're not going to make this show the one where they highlight that.
Yeah.
Unless they're really worried that everything might go to hell as it happens, in which
but
case...
But they should do it at this hour, because if something does happen, it's okay. It
true.
Would just sound like it's part of the show.
That's true. We screw things up pretty regularly, so people would never even notice the difference.
Get over there and then just say, listeners, you've just driven under a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the reception went out for a little bit, but now we're back on the air.
And under lower whacker, now we're at our new studios.
In fact, you might be doing the show from here, and I might be over there.
Already.
Because news, I think, is supposed to move by the end of this month.
That's going to be tough on you when we order the pizza here.
Yeah, well, we're still going to have the camera. That's, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm not hauling. Jess isn't walking down there with pizza for you. I'm sorry, my friend. You'll get your steps in on those nights.
Darn.
The good thing is we'll all be together.
Okay. So I expected that
on
to go.
One floor.
Oh, when we get to the new place. Yeah. I thought you meant
I'm
you know, boy, that was deep, Audrey.
Yeah.
Aubrey.
They're sitting right next to each other. It's okay.
No, I'm really having trouble tonight.
You're talking about favorite moments. Can I interrupt real quick? One of my favorite WGN moments I wasn't part of, but I know that Tom Brenneman was doing a sign-off from a Cubs game.
We were merciless to him.
Good.
And he was thanking everybody. You know, he thanks if it was Andy Mazur, who was traveling with the team at the time, he thanks the Matt Boltz, the studio, or the remote engineer. Thanks to the studio engineers, Sam Humans, and...
Andrea Fanblower.
Yeah, he just kind of mumbled the name because, and he got through it. And so, what did he just say? But it was supposed to have been Aubrey Mumpower. He says, I couldn't read my handwriting or something like that.
Yeah, he thought I was a girl.
Yeah, and he says, tell Audrey I'm sorry. Tell Audrey. Oh, no, it's Aubrey. Okay, tell Aubrey.
Aubrey, let me ask you a technical question. So when we do all this, when we switch studios, our tower is still out in what town is the tower actually in?
Elk Grove Village.
In Elk Grove Village. How in the world does our signal get out to that tower? Is it wires? Is it telephone wires?
Well,
or what is it?
We have four different ways, probably more that we don't even know about. We have a microwave that shoots
transmitter
Hancock,
shoots it to there, okay.
And then Hancock shoots out to the transmitter. Then we have dedicated phone lines for that. We also have a satellite link up.
So the standard way it goes is we have a transmitter here at the tower that is shooting our signal to the Hancock, which
microwave.
Is translating it back over to our transmitter in Elk Grove Village?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that how did it happen? Because that transmitter site has been out there since the 30s. When they first started broadcasting, was it wired all the way out there?
Yes. Before microwave was invented, we had dedicated phone lines.
That just went out there. That's pretty wild. Okay. So you just flip a switch, different wires, or will there be a microwave at the new place that's sending it over?
Mm-hmm.
Is that on their roof then? Or where does that
transmit
from?
No, actually, we got it mounted right outside of our window.
Just like a DirecTV dish?
Shooting Hancock, yeah.
So when it's snowing, will you be out there scraping it off, hanging off the window?
We'll make Jim Holland do that.
I don't think that's going to happen. 312-981-7200. Gene has actually called in with a story to tell, I think, so brace yourselves. Gene, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Well, one of the things that I think is really true, and it's mentioned on at late night radio a lot, is that there's a difference between radio and television viewers and listeners, and that is radio, you become more attached to the people. Maybe it's because you can't see them, and it's that voice reaching out to you, especially in the dark. But I thought that Kathy and Judy had some of the most amazing producers who came up with some of the wackiest ideas. But I'm a senior now, and I can't remember who was responsible for each one. I don't know if it was Kurt Vandenrot one of them came up with a shopping idea, and that was just wacky, and so good. There were so many clever things, and you could tell how clever and intelligent Kurt was. And then Beth Swerth, you know, was funnier than all get out. And what I thought was it was such an interesting mix at the time, because I don't know what title Todd Manley held when he first arrived. He could write the funniest dang commercials and promotions for the station, you know.
Yeah, Todd was the imaging director when he first came in.
Oh, he was priceless.
Gene, what was the shopping thing you're referring to that a producer came up with?
It was wacky shopping. I thought Kurt was responsible, where they sent, it was like a pretend thing. It wasn't the real, like a treasure hunt or something.
All right, Kurt remembers what it is.
It was called Play Mall, and thanks. All of that was very kind, Gene. It wasn't my creation. I think it was Matt Rose, who was two producers before me. But because the bit worked so well, you had to pick three stores just at a random number, 1 through 20, and you would attend a mall. And before the bit started, you had to say, I'm going to spend more than $100 or less than $100. Just because. Mm-hmm. And then so you'd say, okay, I pick number 7. And then you'd go into some ridiculous mall made up store. And it was like it was based off a current event, or it was just something goofy that you would say, okay. And then at the end of the bit, it would run for maybe 30 seconds or so. And you'd say, okay, well, then that cost is $9. Or then you'd get a refund and you'd get some money back. And then so whether you'd spend over or under $100. But we had.
Did the listener get a prize or something out of it? That part I don't remember. I just remember the crazy conversation that went into it, the writing that set the scene. It was just hysterical. And I think Kathy and Judy were just a prime ground for the craziness. And my favorite thing, and, you know, it was so funny because, like, I remember Steve Bertrand tried to be the rudder to keep the ship afloat. You know, when things got too edgy or crazy, he would pipe up. And he was such a funny foil to them. And one day I was out planting tulip bulbs or something in the ground. And most often Kathy and Judy were good at comebacks. And Kathy would say things that I never ever thought of. And she said, "For just one day, I would like to be a man." And it threw Judy. Judy always seemed to me to be the little kind of feminine rodeo drive one, and Kathy was more the realistic, you know, girl from Crystal Lake or whatever. And there was dead air for a second. And Judy said, "Why?" And Kathy said, "Because it would be wonderful. It would be nice to know what it's like to be a man and to be governed by an organ below the belt." And I thought I was going to impale myself on my trowel. I mean, they could come up with some of the damnedest lines. But, you know, the goodness of the show, the reason so many of those shows really work so well are the producers. And I can't imagine what a bedlam that must be to be responding to the talent that's on the air and taking the darn phone calls and dealing with crazy people. You know, there's a lot of them out there.
Yes, there are, Jim.
It was just so amusing. I just can't imagine a better radio station. And, you know, you raise the level of, you know, like, you know, people like John Williams and so many people that came on. And I'm always amazed at what Ro Khan knows and can, you know, spew out. It's just such an interesting radio station because every day you absorb something or somebody else's idea. It might be John's quirkiness or whatever. But it's so obvious that the producers work so very hard.
Gene, thank you so much for jumping in and saying all that stuff. Very, very kind of you. We never tooted our own horns as producers because it was a job and it was whatever. And I always joked that a monkey could do our job. We're answering the phones, putting people on the air. But I would say that in radio in general, and not about us, but like Eric Ferguson is still this huge star in Chicago. He is brutal, I think. I think he's just not funny at all. And I've never gotten it. But I will say this. They have the best producers in the business because the phone calls are what make that show hilarious, is what the listeners say. And that is a lot of producer work to figure that out.
Agreed.
Do you guys have a favorite memory of producing, of doing a show, a favorite moment on a show itself? Or something that really, like, so for me, the best moments were always when there was some insane breaking news. And so that's always usually something terrible and sad. But I remember after I produced Saturday mornings for a long time here to earn a little extra money. And then I stopped when I started working with Steve Dale on the weekends. But I would come in here in the mornings. And Beth was producing, I think it was already Steve Bertrand doing Saturday mornings at the time. And that's when the space shuttle exploded in Dallas. And I was here. And so I helped Beth. And we found people that saw it happen, that found pieces of the shuttle, and we got them live on the radio right that morning. And while that was this terrible, horrendous thing, it was such a rush to be part of a news story and actually make things happen that, you know, helped tell the story and help people relate to it or whatever it was. But those, to me, were always the moments that were the most exciting as a producer.
Yeah, and I'd look to Audrey just because doing the morning show and trying. Because on Kathy and Judy, we did silly stuff, right? I know that moment with the space shuttle story, Beth told me later, you know, that's when I knew that I could be a producer. She had called me to wake me up and say, "This is going on. What do we do?" I said, "Well, if you're up for it, if you want me to come in, I'll come in. And if you're up for it, great." And she did it. She did a fantastic job of getting the right guests on and figuring out how to help WGN tell the story. And when you feel like you're part of something bigger, that's when you feel like you've got your big boy or big girl pants on.
Yeah.
But you did so much more in the mornings when there was real news to talk about. I would have to think that.
It was a blessing and a curse, right? Because to your point, it was generally sad news.
Right.
But one of the things that I always found interesting was, especially in a situation where you didn't know someone involved. We, you know, in the morning show, you had relationships with all sorts of people all over town where you could literally pick up the phone and you knew so and such would be up, or they wouldn't be super grumpy, or they would and it didn't matter because it was news and you needed to convince them to come on. But I always thought it was interesting when it was a stranger, and there was, I remember there was a train accident at some point, and getting in touch, first figuring out how to get in touch with someone, then tracking them down, and then establishing a relationship so that when the PR people came and shut down the communication, that you still had a way in addition to the PR people, and that you needed to establish that trust really quickly and make sure that they felt comfortable that you would use their information in the best way possible. And that was one thing I really appreciated about Bob, is even though, you know, I thought he was pretty conservative and he thought I was a right-wing liberal, he really, in the morning show, we worked hard to try and present both sides of a story or different perspectives rather than just one, so that the conversation could really go on in a more holistic way. And I thought that that was something that I really valued about our show.
You know, it's interesting. So when I came to WGN, you guys were all already here, but Bob Collins was this huge name in radio for a very long time, and he was an imposing presence here in the station. He wasn't a mean, nasty guy, but I never really got to know him. He did his show, and then he went in his office, and then, you know, he would be in and out. I never really got to know Bob, but I would see Audrey producing with him and yelling at him sometimes, and I was like, damn! Listen to her! No, this is how we're going to do it! And I was really like, I don't know if producers do that anymore with hosts. You know, I think we all had our moments with our hosts, but I was like, holy cow, that's not just, hey, take the phone calls and book the guests. That was like you two really worked together, and that he had enough respect for you that you could do that.
Yes.
And still have the job, and he would actually listen to you. I was like incredibly impressed by that when I was here.
Well, let's be clear. He didn't always listen to
well,
me.
Well, doesn't mean he did what you wanted, ways. But he at least listened and didn't just whatever.
And he yes. could be pretty mean sometimes.
I'm sure. They all, people that are get up at 2 in the morning every day to do a show are not going to be the most pleasant people all the time. There's just no way around that, I don't think. It's not a normal life to live.
It's not a normal life, but I will say it was fantastic to be at a Heritage radio station producing the number one show at the number one station in the third largest market with people who were really smart and fun and interesting.
Agreed.
And, you know, you can't. People say, oh, are you upset you didn't get paid anything? No, I had the experience of a lifetime. I produced a show from Radio Havana in Cuba. Like, you can't replace that sort of stuff. And to work with a man who might have been known as a, you know, quite a presence in the station, but he was demanding, and he could be demanding because he demanded that of himself.
Yeah.
And so did everybody on the morning show. And I loved that.
We'd get things done.
Yep.
And Bob would get here at what time every morning? He went on the air at 5, right? You guys did 5 to 9 back
five
then?
5 to 9, yeah. He was usually in by 3:30.
I mean, that's insane. And you'd have 5 or 6 newspapers on your desk. You would go through them every morning, tearing them up. He would be going through them every morning.
So different.
There was a lot of preparation going on to put that show together. I know that was incredible. Tell us
I'm
about
papers, like oh, like yeah, the newspaper. The like yeah. It wasn't like that back then.
Yeah,
we didn't have the social media and that yeah. stuff to work with. It was a completely internet. Different no. ball game. Yeah.
I wondered how we did it without the internet.
We had Associated Press. We're totally dating ourselves, but remember the printer the outside of our offices to the wire stories.
Yeah, that's right. We yeah. print out off the
well,
wire.
If we'd had the internet, Kathy and Judy wouldn't have had a show. Half an hour would be, well, what was the name of the guy in that movie? All right, let's go to the phone. Somebody's going to know.
All right, 312-981-7200. We have to take a quick break. We've got to do the news. Can you guys stick around for a few more minutes now that you're all awake and alive?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. We'll have more to come. 720 WGN.
And we'll never be royal. It's a one in our blood. That kind of love just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz.
We have a royal wedding coming this morning, everybody. Excuse me. Harry and Meghan Markle will tie the knot. Are you guys, you guys are staying up kind of all night here. Will you go home and just get right into royal mode and watch the wedding?
No.
None of you?
Bought myself an elderflower and lavender cake.
What? Is that a royal thing? I haven't read enough to know. What is an elderflower?
I'm not sure, but they keep talking about, oh, I guess it's elderflower and lemon cake. Yeah.
Oh, that makes much more sense.
It's a British thing.
Apparently, you normally serve fruit cakes at weddings, and so this is a huge change in tradition. I don't know. Somehow or other, the only thing, I didn't even realize the wedding was this morning, but I've heard about this cake for weeks, it seems. I think because the baker is an American.
Oh.
They really are changing it up with this one then, I guess, huh?
Having an American baker?
I don't know. I would think that's probably out of the realm of normalcy for a British royal wedding. This is not a good topic for the four of us. Moving on.
Is it Kathy and Judy topic?
Yeah. Princess Diana came to Evanston at one point. I remember we ended up going to, there was a listener, I don't remember her name, but we ended up having a party out there. We got food and just to see her. I don't even remember why she was in town.
So see, wait, you and Kathy and Judy went out there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, not as part of the show, but just to see her?
Did you do a remote?
We recorded. No, it was in the evening.
You didn't get to record an interview with her, did you?
No. But we interviewed the other people that were there.
Did you meet her or see her?
We saw her.
Was that pretty cool?
Yeah, it was.
Is that the most famous person? That was probably the most famous person in the world, other than the Pope, possibly, at the time. Was that the most famous person you ever sort of came in contact with?
Really?
I don't know.
Princess Diana?
On a global level?
I mean, that's a huge name.
We had Hillary Clinton in.
That's what I was going to say.
Princess Diana would strike her down in a moment, though, as far as the fame meter, I think.
Probably.
Totally. But you didn't get to interview her. Was Hillary the best, like the most famous guest you ever, Kathy and Judy, ever had while you were here?
Sure. We didn't do very much with interviews, so.
That's true. You guys did not.
A lot more.
What about you two? Was there one guest that sticks out as like, wow, I met so-and-so?
Well, I have a picture of Barry Manilow hugging me, so that was pretty big for me because I grew up on Barry Manilow.
She's tearing up.
I show the picture to my kids, and they're like, that's you, Mom?
Who's that?
First of all, they're like, who's Barry Manilow? But then they're like, look at your hair, Mom. What did you do? I don't know. We had a lot of guests on Spike's show. But nothing like newsy. It was more like pop culture type people.
Yeah. And sports. I mean, did you guys, Mark Grace was probably on the show with Spike a few times, I would think. No?
Oh, yeah.
And maybe Kerry Wood or people like that?
Yeah. I remember Mark Grace more.
More?
Yeah. During that time. But
what about you, Audrey? You had to have a lot of big names that came through.
The funny thing is, the people I'm remembering, I don't even remember if we had him on, but I remember I got to talk with Studs Terkel.
Okay.
And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And then I also remember trying to find a guest that we could have on the air who would explain cloning Dolly the Lamb in very clear terms to people like me in layman's terms. And that was fascinating, to talk with all these people that knew about cloning and, you know, learn about it from them and try and figure out whether or not they could be, you know, on air in a compelling way. I remember more about screening possible guests than who any famous guest. I honestly don't remember
a famous
guest.
Did you do a lot of talking to guests before you would put them on the air?
If it was for a particular story, yes. If it was something like, you know, during the time, Mayor Daley was our mayor, and I just remember he would always give good quote. He'd say these things, and you'd be like, wow, okay, let's talk to the mayor about that. And because we had his number, you'd just call him in the morning and say, hey, can you talk to us
about
this?
Wasn't that wonderful? Like, we worked at WGN, and you would call. I mean, I was 20-some years old when I started working for Spike, and I would call somebody, hi, I was wondering if you could come on the air. And they're like, absolutely. The power of those call letters and to get anybody, we could had that power to get people to come on the air about whatever topic it was that was happening in the news. I thought it was awesome.
It was, but they didn't always say yes. I remember early in the morning trying to convince people to that they should talk about this newsworthy thing, because if we didn't get them on, they'd end up on the news later someplace.
Yeah. Oh.
So I needed to make sure that they were on with us
right
first.
Yeah. And how would Bob mm-hmm. be if, like, you were, was Bob, when, you know, it's 4:30 in the morning, you're trying to call somebody, 5 in the morning, you're trying to call somebody, would Bob get, come on, you got to get them on? Or if you're like, yeah, they're not answering, or they're not, how persistent did you have to be, and how much pressure would Bob be to, like, come on, this is our job, get them on the phone?
Oh, Bob didn't, there, we didn't have those conversations, because that was just the understanding. You didn't have to talk about that. You knew that you were getting that person on, or you were getting someone even better. And you, I remember after one of the, unfortunately, we're repeating it again yesterday, but it was one of the early school shootings, and we had had someone on regularly to talk about them, and I had called this person and said, I hate to ask you this, but, you know, we've just had another one. Can you come on tomorrow morning to talk about it? And he said, honestly, I am so sick and disappointed about talking about this. I can't do it. Mm. And Bob was really interested in this particular person's perspective on it. And so I remember going out to dinner and calling him and leaving a message saying, look, I would love to talk to you at any time between now and 3 in the morning. Here's my number. Call me whenever. I'll respect your decision. I'd just like to talk to you a little bit more about it. And he did, thankfully, call me. And I remember spending like an hour on the phone with this person as they kind of poured out their heart and soul about how sad and terrible this was. And then by the end, after that release, he did agree to come on the next morning. But I remember it was close to midnight. I was like, okay, I need to hurry up and go to bed.
Oh, my gosh.
We're going to be on the air soon.
Well, that's a pretty cool story, though, and that's going above and beyond to get your guest and get the segment right.
That's the thing. No, that's what I'm sure everybody has equivalent stories, whether it's you or Tracy or
I absolutely
Kurt.
Do not. I did not. I tell John we didn't get him, John. Sorry. Moving on.
No way.
I never, I don't think I worked that hard on a guest ever that I can remember. But we were always doing it right before the show, you know, because we were on from 12 to 3 for the most part when I was with John. So it was all that morning. So if they weren't coming on, it was kind of moving on to the next
thing.
And
you came in early. Like, both you and John were in early before
the
show hours.
John was always well before I would get here. John was here.
Yeah.
He spent a ton of time here at the time. What about, do you guys remember any guests that gave you particular difficulty? Because I have several names that come to mind, like Mickey Rooney was always a son of a when he was he probably remembers him from hundreds of visits. Mickey Rooney was just the worst, most angriest, cantankerous, unhappy person whenever I would see him here.
Get that mic out of my way.
Is that what he would say? It's gonna be difficult to do the interview, but yes, sir. Do you guys have anybody that comes to mind that gave you a lot of heat?
And Robert Goulet, that interview.
That's right. Tell the Robert Goulet story.
So we didn't do very many interviews, but there was a lot of pressure because he was in town to do Man of La Mancha, and the sales team really wanted to get him on, for whatever reason, their show. And so he showed up to the station. This is when the Kathy and Judy used to be on from 9 to 2, but there was a break
The
noon show. And so we'd be on the air, and then we'd get a lunch break. We'd look at it as a lunch break and then come back on the air.
From 1 to 2 just for one more hour?
For like, it was like 12:40.
Okay.
Until 2. Who knows? And so, anyway, so he was supposed to be the first segment after that noon show. And he showed up right at noon to the station, and the receptionist called and said, there's somebody here for you. I said, okay. Well, so I go up there, and it's Robert Goulet, and he's here by himself, which is really kind of odd. Is it, you know,
you think he's a
celebrity of some kind? Yeah. So I bring him in, and he says, I just need a place to sit and be quiet and get my thoughts together. I said, okay. Well, so we put him in a producer studio. I thought, what's going on? And about 5 minutes later, this very harried public relations person shows up. Is he here? And so whatever had happened apparently at the previous interview, he had stormed off and left.
Really?
Knew he was coming here next. So I thought, well, that's weird. So, okay. So I tell her where he's at, and he said he wanted some time to himself. She said, okay, as long as he's here. So we bring him into the studio, and Kathy and Judy are always so chatty on off the air. I mean, they're the same on and off the air. And so we bring him into the studio. I try to get the PR person back in, and I come back in, and nobody's talking. And it was very bizarre.
Awkward?
It was very awkward. Something's not right. And so he asked for cranberry juice, and so I sent our intern out to go get something real quick. I was working on something else. And the interview got underway. She comes back in, gives him the drink, and he says, "Oh, cran apple." And I didn't realize at the time it was a dig, but he was really upset that it wasn't cranberry juice, it was cran apple. And so, and the interview lasted maybe 4 minutes. They asked about what's your week like, or what's your day like? And he goes through this litany of, I have to attend this party, and we do these shows, and this and that. And Judy says, "Well, at least you're not a welder." And he takes that. He says, "I'm sitting here trying to tell you how difficult my life is, and you're telling me that it's a piece of cake." And
whoa.
Yeah, and Kathy said, "Hey, it's clear you're not in a good mood. Maybe we should let you go." And he said something, and she, the professional that she is, she still ended up saying he's going to be at Man of La Mancha at this theater and call Ticketron for information, right, and this and that. And he leaned over to the microphone and said, "I'm sorry, I didn't have a good time doing this. I usually do." And then he walked out. And then the PR person was still on the phone in the producer's booth.
50 feet behind him?
Yeah. She was on the phone with me, and I tapped her on the shoulder. "He's leaving." she gets off the phone with whoever it was he was on just with, and then goes bolting out after him.
Put her running shoes on.
Poor PR person. Oh. That had to be the worst day of her life.
And the curious part was, is that then, so that would have been fall of whatever year it was. That December, we got a Christmas card from Robert Goulet and his wife, and we ended up on their Christmas card
forever. Yeah, right?
It was like
every year.
For however long he lived, I guess. And we have no idea why.
Did you put it up on the wall in the office?
Oh yeah, we put them all together because they were these like glamour shots of the two of them.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
crazy.
Robert Goulet.
Can we break in a breaking news from England?
Please. Got it. Don't tell me it's off.
No.
Oh, that would have been something. That would have been breaking news, Roger.
But the invited guests have begun arriving, and Oprah is in the house.
Oprah is invited to the royal wedding. Do we know? Because there was talk about how what an affront it would be to President Trump if he was not invited, but President Obama was. Do we know if President Obama is planning to attend?
I do not believe that the Obamas were invited.
That's a shame. They should have said, stuck it. I mean, Prince Harry and President Obama are good buddies.
Okay.
Well, he should be there. Maybe he'll come to the United States and help open up the Obama Library. Maybe you never know.
Maybe he will. Yeah. Tracy, do you have memories? Audrey, do you have memories of a bad? I will say that Joe Piscopo was going to be on John's show. And something happened. I want to say our green room was going under something. Our green room wasn't like open, or something was going on with our green room. So I get the call from, I can't remember who was at the front desk back in the day.
Donna? Long?
No, before Donna. I get the call, Joe Piscopo is there, and I say, okay, tell him we'll be out for him in a few minutes. And I left him out there for like 10 minutes because we didn't have a green room to put him in. So then I come get him when it's time to bring him on the show. He's laying on a couch out there, all mad. He's like, "Oh, all right, I guess." And he like makes all these comments about, "That's how you treat your guests." And like, he was furious. And he came in and was really, and then turned it on with John, actually, because he like suddenly performed. Man, he was pissed off the entire time he was here.
I remember, I think it was, what's the Saturday Night Live guy? Daryl
Hammond?
Yeah. He came in and didn't want to do any of his impressions.
Kind of what and you
he,
do, dude.
And so he was really adamant, and Spike's like, "Oh, I love it when you do this." And he was having nothing. And he literally, and so then, I mean, that takes the wind out of your sails. Like, what are you going to talk about?
Yeah.
That's half your bit. And he did not want to do it. And so that was a pretty short. I think that was a Robert Goulet moment on Spike's show. Yeah.
And Spike is so gregarious. How does Spike, because I know he's not getting mad at anybody. Does he just sort of wrap it up then?
Well, okay. We just ended it. I don't know. It was very short. It was because I think he was going to be at Zany's or something. Like, yeah. It was when he was in town for a comedy thing.
Yeah.
And he did. I'm like, what are you going to do on your show if you don't do any of your voices?
Was he not going to do them in his act either?
I don't know. I didn't go to a show, but
well, yeah, I thought Spike might have said. So, what will you be doing at Zany's?
I don't that part. I don't remember. I just remember it was very awkward, and so I was just like, oh god, because I had planned it was going to be so long, and then we're like, oh, this is just going nowhere fast. So we got to abort. Let's just pull the trigger and not go any farther with it. So,
Audrey, do you have a memory of a particularly difficult guest?
Our guests were quite well behaved in the morning show, so that wasn't typically
a
problem.
You never had one that went awry?
What I remember going most awry was Bob had gone to see Blue Man Group, which he loved. He was, he used to be a drummer, and so he loved the show. And very soon afterwards, I said, oh, well, we can have a blue man in. Do you want to do that? Oh, yes, let's do that. But when the blue man came for the interview, Bob was so excited that he just told everybody all about the show and really did not interview.
But he doesn't talk. They're blue men.
I was going to say, do the blue men talk in person?
It's not like a Disney character, yes. the blue men do talk.
Did they come in blue, or is it just the dude that gets painted up at night?
It's the dude that gets painted. And I wanted to know, how does he get painted? Yeah. Is it sort of latexy? Do you sweat a lot? Like, just all the good stuff about how it works. And instead, I got to hear all about Bob's experience attending this, which was interesting, but I'd already heard that. And Bob was a good interviewer. Yeah. So to sit there kind of pulling your hair out, going, your guest is right there. That was the one that I remember. But part of you couldn't be mad, in part because he was just so excited about
it. Yeah, you could tell.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Did you guys ever have a guest that you had to fight with at all? So Stephen Baldwin was supposed to be on John's show. He's supposed to come in the studio. I don't know what he's promoting. This is, he's got nothing good to promote.
Yeah, I was like, what?
But he's in town. He's going to come be on the show. And we get a call like 10 minutes beforehand from his PR guy. He's like, hey, Stephen just wants to do it by phone. And he's like, a block
across
away.
The street.
Yeah. And so I say no. And John's like, well, maybe we should just do it. I'm like, oh my God, it's Stephen Baldwin. We don't need to do him by phone. We talk about something else. It's stupid. I don't know why we're doing this in the first place. And John's like, I don't know, maybe we should do it. I'm like, no, I'm not letting us do it by phone. And so I get a call from the publicist like, hey, he's right here. Can we do it by phone? I said, no, if you guys aren't coming, it's not worth doing. We're not going to do it. So he's like, hold on. Hey, this is Stephen Baldwin. Who's this? I'm like, this is Matt, the producer. Hey, man. Really, do I get it? I'm like, he thinks that if he jumps on the phone, I'll go, oh my God, Steven, yes, okay, let me put you right through. Like, no, we're not going to do it. And he's like,
did he come?
Yes, they came in because he's Stephen Baldwin. He needs this.
What else was he going to do?
Yes. It's not like he can, I blew it off because I couldn't walk a block. He's not Alec.
It's why we're here.
Never thought I'd say this to anybody. That's a good Stephen Baldwin impression.
Yeah, I actually was impressed.
I used to be called the Ugly Baldwin. That was when I worked in radio in LA, that's what the host called me. He looks like the Ugly Baldwin.
How is it that we've known each other this long? Some of the stories.
I'm sure you've
heard
that story.
I don't remember that story. Does this count as one of our quarterly meetings?
Yeah, I can't get out now. This until December.
Because of baseball season?
Yes.
Okay. I really enjoy it when we all get together. It was really great. Just like I missed you at the Walk of Fame yesterday. We always meet on that day, but you guys didn't come. I guess maybe because we were going to see each other tonight or this morning. But
I just had work to do and coming down for an hour. We all live pretty, except for Audrey, we all live kind of far away from here. So it's hard to run in.
Yeah. And we were just together a couple of weeks ago. That's one of that's the best part, right? Is with all the guests and with all the to-dos about the job, the best part is the people. Because whether it's talking with the callers, we heard about that from Gene earlier. We get to all the people that we got to work with hosts-wise, but especially the producers when we know what each other's going through and we've been friends for, I can't believe it's been this long.
Going to all our weddings.
Yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite parts is we always used to talk about GN being a family.
Yeah.
And it really is. I can see Aubrey here, and it really is like no time has passed.
That's Cap.
Did you say you're the stepchild
of the family?
After the Walk of Fame, Cap, we were upstairs with his wife and his family, and he's like, Tracer, we really had a great time.
Tracer,
it was. Well, I was with Maxfield too.
A little more enthusiasm, I'm sure. Tracer, we really had a great time.
And it was just, it was fun. We were talking about theme sports and Spike Show.
Theme sports on Spike that was, Show. That was awesome.
That was one of probably my favorite bits on Spike Show. There was times that we had to keep our finger on the dump button. Yeah. But that was one of my favorite memories of Spike Show. And Capone was obviously the big part of that. So, but he was talking about all the stuff we would do off the air and just how much like a family that it's just, it can never be recreated what happened. It sounds like something your mom would say, like, oh, back in my day, you know, but that's how I feel about it. It was really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, especially for the four of us who were in our early 20s and, you know, really just getting out in the world at the time, it was, you know,
yeah,
outside of college. These are were very formative years for all of us, I think.
The day before my internship for, when I got the internship here, I was a waitress at Chili's. And I waited on Spike, but I recognized his voice, and I was like, are you Spike Odell? This is dating myself. I ran to the back of the restaurant after talking with Spike to get on a payphone to call my parents to tell them that I had just waited on Spike Odell and his family. And so the next day when I came for the internship with Randy Eccles for the internship, Spike walks in. He's like, hey, Tracy, nice to see you. Know, and I was like, oh, my God. Pee in my pants, like, oh my God, 20 something and Spike Odell knows who I am or remembers me from last night. And it was awesome, and then it just fell into place from there. So
it's crazy. Thank you all so much for coming in. Kurt Vandera, longtime producer for Kathy and Judy. Tracy Weiner, now Tracy Weiner. She was Tracy Huvelman back in the day with Spike Odell. And of course Audrey Clark, who is Bob Collins' producer. Thank you guys so much for coming in. It means a lot.
Thanks, Matt. For having us. Thank you. Sorry it took so long.
So we'll do it at the new place? Hell no. We're never getting up.
Let's head over.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. News coming up, 720 WGN.